Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankford, welcoming you to the January 25th edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. It would seem to be inconceivable that after more than 10 years of waging war in Afghanistan and Iraq, with nothing remotely resembling a victory to show from either battlefield, and our country trillions of dollars in debt, that Washington would be considering another potentially far more devastating war in the same region. But Washington, as we know it, is represented by more than the president and his cabinet. And while it may seem that the Obama administration is hesitant about launching a war against Iran, the next target in Israel's crosshairs, some of the same powerful elements in our nation's capital that pushed us into the war on Iraq on Israel's behalf in 2003 are engaged in doing the same with Iran with equal, if not greater, fervor. With Congress, for all intents and purposes, safely in AIPAC's pocket, the pro-Israel web of think tanks, the Council for Foreign Relations, the Washington Institute on Near East Policy, the American Enterprise Institute, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and the Saban Forum of the Brookings Institution, oh, did I mention the Foreign Policy Initiative, successor to PNAC? Well, and are debating whether the most stringent sanctions ever imposed on a non-belligerent country will be enough to prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons, or is it better to not only take out Tehran's nuclear facilities to amass a military strike, but its government as well? It's rare to find a talking head on any of the network news programs or on NPR that's not connected to one or more of these institutions. The fact that neither the CIA, the Mossad, nor any other intelligence agency has found any definitive evidence that Iran is actually in the process of producing such weapons or is capable of doing so now or in the near future is not considered by the experts within these think tanks to have any relevance. Nor has anyone of a similar stature who has questioned the right of the U.S. to attack a country that has not attacked us or anyone else, or threatened to do so unless in self-defense, been given the time on our national media to make the case against either sanctions or war. This morning we are going to talk again with someone who has made U.S. relations with Iran his field of expertise and who does challenge the conventional myopia of Washington's career warmongers. I'm speaking of Gareth Porter, of the Interpress News Service, who will be making his fourth appearance on Takes on the World. We'll be speaking with Gareth in about 20 minutes past the hour, but first I want to bring you up to date on what's been happening in the past 2 weeks regarding Iran that makes a frank discussion of the subject so urgent. Since my last program, several important events have taken place that would seem to bring the chances of another war even closer. First was the murder of an Iranian nuclear scientist, 32-year-old chemical engineer Mostafa Ahmadi Roshan, who died instantly when a magnetic bomb attached to his car by a passing motorcyclist exploded in traffic. Roshan was the fourth scientist connected with Iran's nuclear program to be assassinated in a terrorist attack in 2 years, all of which is widely believed have been carried out by Israel's Mossad, which has a decades-long history of murdering those perceived as enemies of the state, regardless of what country they happen to be in. It was no coincidence, some suspect, that the assassination took place just after Iran had announced it was ready to reopen talks about its nuclear program. Iran was quick to blame both Israel and the U.S., and the U.S. was almost as quick to deny any involvement. Both Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and National Security Council spokesman Tommy Vitor immediately condemned the assassination and vehemently denied any U.S. involvement in that or any other violence inside Iran. It was the first time the U.S. government had chosen to distance itself so forcefully from actions that the mainstream media had generally treated as part of a joint U.S.-Israeli policy. The murder of Roshan was quickly followed 2 days later, another coincidence, by the apparent leak of a story that seemed intended to place a greater distance between the two countries and cast Israel in a negative light. It was the exposure of a series of CIA memos from the last 2 years of the Bush administration describing how Israeli Mossad agents posed as American spies to recruit members of the terrorist organization Jundallah to fight their covert war against Iran and carry out what are commonly referred to as false flag operations. According to investigative journalist Mark Perry, writing in Foreign Policy magazine online. The memos, as described by his sources, debunked reports from 2000 and 2008 that accused the CIA at the direction of the White House of covertly supporting Jindallah, a Pakistan-based Sunni extremist organization. But while the memos show that the United States had barred even the most incidental contact with Jindallah, according to the two intelligence officers with whom Perry spoke, the same was not true of Mossad. The memos also detail CIA field reports saying that Israel's recruiting activities occurred under the nose of U.S. intelligence officers, most notably in London, the capital of one of Israel's ostensible allies. The officials did not know whether the Israeli program to recruit and use Jindallah is ongoing. Nevertheless, writes Perry, they were stunned by the brazenness of the Mossad's efforts. It's amazing what the Israelis thought they could get away with, the intelligence officers said. Their recruitment activities were nearly in the open. They apparently don't give a damn what we thought, end quote. The Israelis did get away with it, just as they did with the attack on the USS Liberty in 1967, which took the lives of 34 U.S. sailors and wounded another 171. Well, not only was there no report in the files of actions taken against Mossad, but aside from its circulation on the internet and the blogosphere, Perry's story was totally ignored by the mainstream U.S. media and NPR. Nevertheless, the assassination of the Iranian scientist and the leak to Perry of Mossad's double dealing may have contributed to the sudden and surprising cancellation of a much touted and long-awaited joint military exercise between the U.S. and Israel, which would have been the largest yet. That exercise, named Austere Challenge 12, scheduled for April, was intended to simulate a joint U.S.-Israeli effort to identify, track, and intercept incoming missiles by integrating sophisticated U.S. radar systems with the Israeli Arrow, Patriot, and Iron Dome anti-missile defense systems, all of which have been funded by U.S. taxpayers. What will happen to the first group of a projected 9,000 U.S. soldiers scheduled to participate in the exercise with the Israeli military, who reportedly began arriving in Israel in early January and were expected to stay there most of the year, was not mentioned. U.S. participation in the exercise, which would be geared to a scenario involving an Iranian retaliation against an Israeli attack on its nuclear facilities, would have clearly made the United States complicit with Israel in that attack. According to my guest Gareth Porter in an article that he wrote last week for Counterpunch with Jim Loeb, Obama and U.S. military leaders apparently decided that the U.S. couldn't take part in such an exercise so long as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu refused to give the administration any assurance that it will not attack Iran without prior approval from Washington. The official explanation from both Israeli and U.S. officials about the delay was that both sides agreed to it. The Israeli papers Ma'ariv and Arutz Sheva, the Israeli National News Service, citing an article from London Times, reported that Israeli officials told visiting U.S. Joint Chief of Staff Martin Dempsey that it would give President Obama no more than 12 hours' notice if and when it attacks Iran. The Netanyahu government also, the report said, will not coordinate the attack with the U.S., the latest in a number of supposed scenarios concerning cooperation or lack of it between Jerusalem and Washington. There is speculation whether the rumors are based on facts or are leaked by officials to mask the possibility of secret military coordination. The London Times, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, a club